Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Basic Latina Podcast, an intimate conversation with friends about love, life, wellness, and everything in between. And today we have on the show Kimberly Lyons. Now, Kim was on the show before, guys. You remember that episode where we talked about wealth and money? Well, I wanted to invite Kim back on to talk about generational wealth. A couple of weeks ago, I asked on my Instagram what you guys wanted to talk about, and this is one of the topics that you wanted me to highlight on the podcast. And based on Kim's experience, I thought she would be perfect. Now, Kimberly Lyons currently resides in New York. She is a senior vice president at a French investment bank, and she's also the creator of the Bronx Budget Girl Instagram. It is basically a platform that helps urban professionals with budgeting, savings, and investment information. Now, what better person to talk about generational wealth? Welcome back, Kim.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited because what prompted me to reach out to you, you know, not only did people tell me they wanted to talk about this, but you had posted a bunch of stuff about generational wealth on your the Bronx Budget Girl Instagram. And I have to say, right, I love the page. It gives me so much information. I'm so grateful.
I am so happy to hear that feedback. I am a little delinquent in posting up-to-date content because I'm just still trying to get a hold of being like a content creator.
Yeah.
It's really a lot of work. It's like another full-time.
It's totally a lot of work, yeah.
And so I like get on a roll and it's like, okay, I'm posting, I have this topic, I have this idea, and then I get all the info and I like start posting. And I get all this engagement, and then I go dark for like a week. And I'm just like, if you have questions, just DM me because I cannot keep up with this schedule. Like, I don't know how these people on Instagram do it. I really don't. It's truly like having another job.
No, it truly is being like running a page for Instagram or being an influencer is another job. But I think, to be honest, Kim, your page is curated like beautifully. I know that you were very active over the summer and then you kind of went dark, as you say, after that.
Yeah.
But everything is like pretty, like, you know, you have information, you have links, you ask questions, and I love it. I really, really love it.
Well, that I am very happy to hear, and it definitely will give me a boost. I know I'm going to take a little time off from work during the winter time, so I think I'll be able to like focus a little bit more on what my true passion is. And that's really like helping people in a personal finance space. Cause I think that especially with like urban professionals, minorities, I think that we kind of get caught up and we're thinking that this world of like savings and investments is like beyond us. And we get tripped up with terminologies and things like that. And it's all really, you know, pretty simple. So I like to just like break it down into layman's terms.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much for saying that because that brings us right into it. So what, it sounds like, you know, creating Bronx Budget Girl came out of a place where you felt like young urban professionals were struggling with savings and investment. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay, great, great. So tell me a little bit about the goal of the Bronx Budget Girl and what you are hoping for it for right now.
So right now, people ask me that all the time. They're like, all right, the first question is really like, are you looking to monetize this? And I think that that's sort of like the culture of Instagram now.
Mm-hmm.
That everyone is looking as like another stream of income. And for me right now, it's really just about educating people, like helping people. You know, of course, I don't want to do like labor for free, but I think, you know, just with the basic concepts, that's free information. It's stuff that people can really Google if they want to sit down, you know, and like do that and have the time to do it. But a lot of people don't have the time or they fall into a rabbit hole when they are on the internet and really, you know, they can't see the forest from the trees, if you will. So I kind of like to just parse the information out and like filter it into like what's the most important concepts that you need to be aware of. So for right now, it's primarily focused on education.
Awesome. And I love your description, because you're saying that people have the resources, but right now they aren't really, you know, maybe they don't have the time, or they don't know
how
to start. Right.
Right.
Now, this topic of, because savings, investing, managing your money, all those things, there's so many books, so many resources out there right now. And, you know, Kim's Instagram is perfect for that. Other resources are as well. But this term generational wealth, I had never heard this term until recently. Could you break it down for us, Kim, and start by telling us what generational wealth is?
Sure. So the concept of the concept of generational wealth is just creating wealth that literally lasts through generations. Like, it means that wealth that I create today will be available and passed down through my children, their children, their children's children. When you think of the Rockefellers, the Astors, all of the wealth that is generated today, that basically started like 300 years ago, their offspring are still living off of that wealth. So that's a concept for Black and Brown people. We don't have 300 years of generational wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, due to a number of things, mostly institutional racism, but that's another topic. So that's basically what generational wealth is: wealth that is passed down from one generation to another. It's the accumulation of assets for the future generations, to be able to provide financial security. The grandchildren won't have to worry about paying for college or, you know, even their lifestyle.
Right, right. So from what I gather from what you're telling me, Kim, is that this is a concept that isn't very, not that it's not known among people of color or Black and Brown communities, but it's not something that we usually do. You usually see that Caucasian people, white people, they're the families who are doing this.
Right. And that's pretty much because they got a head start. It's not that we don't want to do it or we're incapable of doing it. It's sort of, it's a lot of structural barriers that prevent us from having the same amount of generational wealth. You know, now I do think that, also, again, thanks to Instagram and thanks to the internet, that people are starting to, we may be the first generation that is starting, or the second generation that's benefiting from generational wealth, but it is catching on. We definitely have, it's going to be a lag. It's going to be a lag for a long time in terms of the value of our generational wealth versus their generational wealth. We have a lot of catching up to do, but, you know, that's just the reality.
And that's because we started so late, correct?
Right.
Barriers and, you know, barriers, right?
So right.
What are some of the structural barriers that, I know you mentioned institutional racism, which is a whole different topic, but what are some, like, very, not simple, but some ways that, you know, people of color, Black and Brown people, aren't able to develop generational wealth?
Well, I think that the main way that people started building generational wealth was through land.
Mm-hmm.
And the Land Act, I want to say, I'm going to get the date wrong, whenever it was in the 1800s. You know, the whole concept of 40 acres and a mule.
Yes.
Black people never got their 40 acres and a mule.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically written into law, and we were not allowed to purchase the land. We were only allowed to work the land. And that is how most of the wealth in a country was started. And even moving through post-slavery, the Jim Crow era, banks would not allow us to borrow money the conventional way, the same way that our white counterparts were allowed to. We were not allowed to get mortgages and in certain areas, there was the whole redlining factor. You know, when we were able to get mortgages, we had to pay a higher rate for them. The so subprime mortgage phenomenon that was pushed more towards the minority community. So we're paying more for the same amount of house than our counterparts were. And then the values of those houses, because we were sort of steered towards buying houses in urban communities, the house value didn't grow as well as our counterparts did. So there was no equity being built in that housing stock. So it's just a lot of pieces to the puzzle that was just sort of put in. And, you know, like these things were, it was written into law, like, you know, there are actual like structural things that are out there that are just, you know, sort of just cut down on ways that we were able to build the wealth. So that's one thing. That's pretty much the cornerstone of it all.
Mm-hmm. That's where it started. Right.
Right. That's where it started. And then you get to a point where, okay, you know, Black and brown people are now like college graduates. We are, you know, making good amounts of money. We're still paying, I want to call it the Black tax. We're still paying a tax, regardless of if our credit profile may be the same as our counterparties. Because of institutional racism, we still may get hit with a higher interest rate for things like auto loans, for things like, you know, personal loans, things of that nature. So, like, we're still paying a higher price just for being who we are. So that drives down our rates of savings, our rates of investing.
Right.
We start investing later.
Of our skin.
Right. And then also, you know, I think a big thing that we don't talk about or we don't discuss a lot is that it's ingrained in us in our community to help each other, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been in corporate for a very long time. There's not many people of my counterparts that, like, once they get to a certain point or a certain level of success, you know, it's only, they only have to worry about themselves. They don't have to worry about, like, oh, like, you know, I have to help my grandmother pay her rent. I have to help my uncle pay his rent.
Yes.
I have to help, you know, like, this person lost their job. Like, we have a different sense of community.
Right.
And there's more of a burden or onus on those that, quote unquote, need it to reach back up and, you know, help our family.
Wow. This just sounds like a setup, Kim, from the start.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is.
I never thought that. I love the way that you explained it by taking us back to us working on the land and not being able to own the land and how that was a trickle effect. And then black people not being able to have loans, not being able to buy a home for so long. And it makes sense when you say, like, now we're having to play catch up, because how can we really catch up when there's third and fourth and fifth generation
Exactly. Right,
to have all this money?
They would say it would take, I think, 4 or 5 generations for us to catch up.
Wow.
I mean, the statistics are, like, mind-boggling. And that's if we started saving and investing. Like, as soon as you get a job right now, you know, that's saying that the theory is you start investing in your 401k or you start investing in your Roth IRA, and you're also saving, you know, money in a general account. But that's not the reality for most of us. Most of us have, you know, our student loans. We have a shitload of debt. We have, you know, maybe have medical bills. Again, family obligations. So we're not privy. We don't have that privilege to just, like, have a clean slate and just only worry about ourselves. We don't have that privilege.
Absolutely not, because for people of color in urban communities, you're expected, if you don't take care of your parents,
exactly,
you're shitty. Like, you know, yes, we're helping out our, like, you would be considered someone who doesn't care about their family, and you would be shunned.
Right, right, exactly. And I'm not saying that that's a good thing. I think that that's that's some healing that needs to take place within our own communities, because we shouldn't bear that burden and we shouldn't bear that brunt. But I mean, a lot of frank conversations that need to be had between us and our parents and us and our parents is that, you know, sometimes we're looked at as the retirement plan for parents.
Yes.
Like, you know, like people joke like, oh, my kid's going to take care of me this time and third, but that is hindering our own process of getting ahead. Like, there will be no generation. Like, it, basically, each generation is just staying afloat.
Absolutely. And it makes so much sense while I'm talking to you, because I've known people who, I mean, think about the people who passed away that have those, like, GoFundMe
for,
like,
exactly,
their kids, and they don't have anything saved up for a funeral.
Right. Exactly.
Let alone any generational wealth, because I'm sure that they had to pay that person's bills or they have to take care of their affairs. So, well, all those factors against them, Kim, and it's taking us 4 to 5 generations for us to catch up. What are people doing now, or what are we doing now from your research and your experience?
So I think that there is definitely a movement. I'm seeing it now in the debt-free community movements. These are like communities that I follow on social media. There's debt-free communities. There are FIRE communities, which means financial independence, retire early. And that's definitely catching on with a lot of Black and brown minorities. I'm sorry, Black and brown millennials. And they are actually having these hard conversations with their parents, having these conversations, these hard financial conversations. They are living frugally. They are actively and aggressively paying off their debt. They are looking for ways to invest outside of your company-sponsored retirement plan. They are looking into investment properties. So I do feel like there is a momentum. There's like a shift, because people are, you know, like really seeing the severity of it all, especially now, like the student loan crisis, medical bill, you know, like that's also like the next crisis. Like, people are going bankrupt from paying healthcare bills. Like, what developed nation does this happen in only in hours? Like, you can't even pay a fortune to the doctor. So I definitely do see a momentum shift to being financially responsible.
I agree with you, Kim. I think that there's more resources for Black and brown millennials and young professionals to
absolutely
step away from their generational trauma and like break those chains so that they can be able to like have wealth for their family.
Right. And I also tell people, I advocate, like, sometimes, like, we come from, especially, like, you know, I don't want to paint this broad brush that everyone's experience is the same. Like, not every Black and Spanish kid grew up in poverty. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say at all. But for those of us that, you know, that did, you know, you, even if you get to a point where you have a good job, you have a good degree, you still have a sense of scarcity, like, in your mind. Like, you're kind of scared of being broke again. So, you know, like, that is actual trauma. And I, like, advocate for people to, like, bring this up in therapy. Like, this is something that you also need to address and need to break down and, like, create these boundaries. Like, we all grew up with, like, you know, you see these athletes, these entertainers, the first thing they do when they, you know, get put on or they make it big is they buy a house for their mom. They buy this for their mom. And I feel like that's still ingrained in like the small person working a 9-to-5. Yeah, that's great. But like, you can't take so much from yourself. Like, you have to make sure you are on steady financial footing before you can help anyone else.
I think, no, you're absolutely right. But I think now we are finally able to accept the fact that we have to take care of ourselves, because that was not the case before. I think the mental health movement, I know, you know, self-care is used a lot and mental health is used and abused a lot, but I think the one thing that I can get behind is the fact that people are really taking care of themselves.
And that's amazing, and I hope that continues, because that is absolutely important. Like, you're not going to get ahead in anything if you don't take care of yourself first.
Absolutely. And this, what you just said too, reminded me of this book that I like, The Millionaire Mindset.
Yeah. I've heard of that book. I haven't read it yet, though.
It's a good book. I mean, the guy's a little, like, problematic the way he says things because he kind of, like, yells at you, which is kind of strange because I don't think he needs to yell. But his concept is basically what you were just talking about, how even when you have a little money, we're still thinking from a place of lack and scarcity if you've always been poor your whole life. And right. If you continue to think like that, that's exactly where you will stay.
Right, exactly, exactly.
And it seems kind of silly, but they do say that, like, poor people, they stay poor because they think poor. And then rich people stay rich because they think rich or they act rich. How do you feel about that?
Okay, that's... I don't like...
One of the things that he says, that's why I say it's problematic.
Yeah, I don't like statements like that because it's kind of like blaming the victim, if
it totally is, yeah.
You will. And again, I'm very much like, even though I, you know, I do follow these pages and I do, like, you know, I'm an advocate of those type of communities, but I am very bothered by the fact, especially within, we're talking about, like, America, like, people really ignore all of the structural issues that have gotten us here. Like, right. No, I'm not poor because I'm thinking that I'm poor. I'm poor because, you know, like, when my great-grandfather came home from World War II, he wasn't able to buy a house or he wasn't able to use his GI Bill to go to college, and he got steered into an auto plant and was making, like, pennies on a dollar compared to the white person next to him. Like, these are the things that need to be addressed and explored. Like, that's why we're poor. It's not poor because I'm not manifesting abundance. Like, everybody can manifest what they want. Like, those statements definitely bother me.
I don't blame you. They bother me too. I really like this book, but I had a hard time with him basically saying that I had to manifest money, because to me, in order for me to get money, I have to make money.
You have to make money. I mean, that's what it is. I mean, even a lot of these, like, personal finance gurus that show you, like, you know, you need to save money. You're making irresponsible decisions. Your coffee, you're buying avocado toast. Like, me buying a $2 coffee is not making me poor. Like,
right.
You know, wages have not risen in this country in years. Like, okay, unemployment is low, but that's because people are doing 2 and 3 jobs to support themselves. That was not the case in the 50s and the 60s. So all of the people of that generation who's saying, pointing fingers at the end, like, you're lazy or this, like, no, we have a gig economy now. Like, while you're sitting up in your cushy corporate job, that corporation is basically contracting out 2 or 3 people to do the same job that you're doing, and they're paying them pennies on a dollar of what you make.
Yeah, like, I'm glad you mentioned lazy. Do you think that this generation is lazy? Because
no.
I think that my generation is lazy, and I think that's ridiculous.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
I don't know anyone that has one job. Everyone has 1 or 2 jobs and a side hustle.
And that's sad, to be honest. That is sad. Like, I would be considered an older millennial, but I would, like, faint if I had to have a second job. Like, I'm so tired with one job. I cannot imagine. So I think that this generation is probably, like, one of the most ambitious and most aggressive generations to get out there and do what they have to do to make ends meet, you know, to put a roof over their heads, to cover their debt. Like, I have no idea what this whole lazy millennial even came from.
You know why? It's come from, at least I've heard it from people who are upset. For example, to be transparent, I put in my notice at my job. I'm quitting because I'm moving to another state. I'm unhappy, a whole bunch of reasons. But I had a conversation with a friend, and she made a comment about how she thought that I switched jobs a lot. And I took that to heart, because I'm just like, well, why do you want me to stay at a job where I'm unhappy and I'm getting paid terribly? Like, I'm a therapist, and I get, like, mental abuse on a regular basis. I feel like I should get paid well to do something that I enjoy. That's all I really want, is to get paid well to do something that I feel like I'm really good at, and to be able to, I want to be able to fulfill my purpose and get paid well. But she had said, well, your generation is lazy. You guys are always changing jobs. I'm like, well, it's not like before where your grandparents were at a job for 15, 16, 20, 25 years. There isn't a job that you could really do that.
There's no job security anymore.
No.
Or, I mean, like, the market has changed. Like, like you said, there's no one that I know that stays at a job for 30 years and then you get a watch and you get a nice retirement package. That, like, the economics just doesn't support that anymore. The business cycles don't support that anymore. So the only way that you will increase your salary or will increase your title is to switch jobs.
Absolutely. And I support anyone who really wants to have, like, a job move. And I don't understand what the laziness comes from. But also, I love that you talked about not feeling guilty and things like that, about, like, buying a coffee and things like that. I mean, you and I have had conversations about, like, how I was spending my money and I was making a lot and wasn't spending it well. But we haven't been able to catch up. But honestly, Kim, all it took was for me to control what I was spending my money on, for me to get on track and realize how much I have left over. Right. And how I can get an avocado toast, but also put towards my 401k, put towards my savings, and invest a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think for most people, it's just, that's exactly what it is. It is writing down your revenue, your income, right, and writing down your expenses. A lot of people don't know how much they're spending or can't understand why they can't save. It's because they're not accurately keeping track of what they spend. Like, if you... Right. Write down, like, you will see, like, so much money going out the door on, like, stuff that you forgot that you purchased, you forgot that you brought. So I'm definitely not into, like, shaming you. I think it's really just about education. Like, okay, well, sit down, write out literally everything you purchased for, like, Monday through Friday, and people are seriously surprised at the amount of money they spend.
Yes. Yes, I was definitely surprised. But I think it's all related, Kim. You know, back to us being not having the opportunity to have generational wealth and build it, not being able to have job security, not being able to pay off our student loans because it's very expensive to go to college, to earn the higher degrees, so we can get that nice job that doesn't pay well. Like, this is a trap.
I know. It sounds horrible the way you're saying.
It sounds like
adulthood is a trap. Do not be in a rush to grow up.
No. So then what do we do? Because I feel like you mentioned a lot of things that were hopeful, right? So this generation is very hungry, very aggressive. There's so many opportunities now. Social media has allowed for people to, like, you know, gain an income. So what do we do now in order to build generational wealth? What are the steps that we have to take?
I think that it starts with getting a hold of your budget. One, I know this is very much like an entrepreneurial driven generation as well. Mm-hmm. What I will tell people is just don't jump out the window without a safety net. Like, if you have a great idea and you think that that's going to be, you know, your own, what makes you retire, and while you still have a 9-to-5, make it work while you're doing your 9-to-5. Do not quit your job until you're actually seeing an income from your, like, little side gig or your side hustle. Always have an emergency fund. Mm-hmm. I advocate having at least 6 months. Some people do 3 to 6 months. We will probably have a recession within the next year or two. Excuse me, if not sooner. So I would tell people to bump it up to, like, 6 to 9 months. Also know that business is not always glamorous. So I think a lot of people do get caught up on what they see on social media. And people need to realize that what they see on social media is the highlights, not the lowlights. And not every month is going to be a win with your business. So if you're going to get in, you know, be prepared for the long haul. That being said, you know, make sure that you are budgeting correctly. You have a hold of what your expenses are. pay yourself first, meaning save. You should be aiming at saving about 15% of your income. And when I say save, it's a mixture of saving like in a savings account and investing. A lot of people do their investments through their company sponsored 401ks. You can also do just a general individual retirement account, a Roth IRA. And then some people, if you want to take the plunge, I don't really advocate individual stock investing unless you like are willing to dedicate yourself to do the research for that. But like exchange traded funds or index funds, those are good ways to get started as well. Pay down your debt. Make sure you have very minimal consumer debt. That's basically credit card debts and personal loan debts. Student loans, we know like that's a major issue if they are eligible for the forgiveness programs. Definitely seek that out. Make sure you're doing everything to the T. I think I read like another article where they just rejected like 90% of the people who thought they were going to get the student loan forgiveness. So make sure that you are actually eligible for that. Go to low-cost schools. I'm very much a big advocate of going to like community college and then transferring into a four-year school. Going to public schools or private schools. Also making sure that the major that you pick is something that can sustain the lifestyle. Like have very clear goals about what you're going to do with your degree. I think one thing I will give credit to is that this generation does not fall into, you know, to be an adult, you have to own a home. I definitely don't see that as much because a home is going to be your largest expense. It's going to be your largest purchase, your largest debt. While it can be your most valuable investment, it doesn't happen like that all the time. You have to make sure that, you know, your home has good value and it's actually going to grow in value. A lot of times it doesn't. The housing market can be pretty fickle. What I would suggest people to do is to look into investment properties first. Look into a two-family home or duplex or something like that. Something that you can live in yourself and then rent out a portion that pays the mortgage. So, you know, you're building, that's built-in equity right there. So instead of like going for your dream home first, get your elbows a little bit dirty and get an investment property first. And that like buy assets that can pay for your liabilities instead of buying liabilities that are going to drain from your assets.
When I think of generational wealth, I assume that it's being able to like pass down something to your kids, like a house. But you're saying that perhaps that might not be like an investment you want to make first. You may want to like invest in something like smaller, like investment property that you could rent out and things like that.
So you're correct in that. I think our traditional thought of generational wealth is starting from inheriting a house or inheriting land.
Right.
But
right.
Things have changed. So like it's not as easy for us to buy homes in the same vein that it was for our parents or our grandparents to buy homes.
Right.
Like homes are just not as affordable when you compare like our dollar versus their dollar in the housing market. So you can still pass down an investment property to your kids. You can still pass down the equity that you've taken out because of that investment property. You're passing down your actual investment funds to your kids. Like all of those things are generational wealth. Life insurance policies, like all of those things are used to create generational wealth.
Okay, because I've definitely seen in movies where, hopefully you can explain this to me. I've seen in movies where someone will pass away and then their kids will get a whole bunch of money. So what is that? Is that like someone took out a life insurance to pay for they put away money for their kids or they had a claim or?
Yeah, no.
To their kids or?
So we're talking about movies. I'm pretty sure we're talking about our white counterparts. So we're talking about.
I am talking about white people.
We're talking about white people. We are talking their inheritance, and their inheritance are investments, most likely.
Wow, that's wild.
Yeah, it's wild. It was built on our backs. It was wild. Their inheritance are properties, their real estate, it's investments, stocks, bonds, it's art, it's jewelry.
It wow. No, that makes a complete sense.
That is their inheritance.
So what about when people of color, say someone my age who doesn't have a will, and my mom, I don't think my parents had a will, I don't think my dad when he passed had a will, I don't think my mom has one. When people don't have wills, and they're like, well, I don't have anything to give you.
I am very much an advocate of having a will. Just because you don't know what you have. Like, a lot of people don't know what they have value of. Especially if you may have siblings, you may just want an executor of the state, like one designated person, you know, for even a life insurance policy, you want one person to be in charge of
Like your beneficiary.
Exactly.
Okay. So people
A will is very easy. I think a lot of people think that you have to have like a lawyer or retainer. You can get a will online for like $25.
Get out of here, really?
Mm-hmm. It's like,
do we just
services? You do like a will template.
Is there a website? Is there a website?
Let me find it. It definitely is a website. You can like just type in like will.
I mean, I can. Well, yeah, that makes sense. I thought you knew like a specific website or.
I don't have one on my off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I definitely have seen a number of sites floating around. I will forward you the one that I know about. I know this girl had mentioned it in her blog, so I have to just go and check. I think that one is verified. Like that she used.
Wow.
Okay. And she said it wasn't that hard at all.
I'm glad that we're talking about it because I've definitely heard, I mean, I've said it myself and my family, they're like, well, I don't have a will because I don't have anything. I don't have any property. I don't own anything. And I'm like, well, that makes sense. But people should not be thinking like that. You should definitely have a will.
No. Yeah.
Okay. And one last question, Kim, because you mentioned the recession. Now, I was reading a little bit about the recession. Like, I'm new to this, so I'm just trying to get myself educated. And I heard that if you are in a customer-based field, that you should be good during the recession. Is that true?
That's interesting. I don't think that is true or not true. Okay, let me say this. It depends on what the source of the recession is. Meaning, the last recession that we had in 08 and 09 was driven by the housing market. So you saw people, you know, losing their homes. A lot of the people that were living a life during that time, they were taking money out of their homes because their homes had an inflated value. So they would take out home equity lines and loans, use a credit card, they were shopping, they were going to the malls, the big box stores, Home Depot, this and that. So when the recession hit, sales income dropped. So sales tax, the revenues from sales tax dropped because people weren't buying as much discretionary things. They weren't doing a lot of discretionary spending. So that's where you like first saw the signs of weaknesses. So in that case, you would see that if you were in a service profession, you would have gotten hit because people don't have the discretionary income to go to restaurants, to tip waitresses and waiters, to get their hair done.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
That nature. So it depends on what industry or what sector the recession will begin in.
Right.
For you to understand who's going to be impacted the most.
Okay, so we won't know who will be impacted by the recession until it happens.
Until it actually happens, which is why I say, everybody, just save your money.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Everyone, so people, if they're worried about the recession now, what they should be worried about is saving their money for when the recession comes.
Right. I mean, there are certain sectors that you know is going to be pretty safe, like healthcare. Everybody's going to need a doctor. Everyone's going to need a nurse. So one would tend to think like, oh, okay, so teachers as well. But no, because when state income tax drops, they do cuts, and education is one of the first areas that gets cut. The last recession, there were so many teachers that were laid off, so many school budgets that got slashed, and you would think that these are government jobs and they should be safe, but that was not the case.
Wow. I mean, that's sad. That's really sad.
It is absolutely sad.
Do you think that you'll focus on the recession, like when it happens, put more resources out there for?
Oh, absolutely. I am like a gloom and doom, like, gloom and doom nerd. I like love to talk about the recession.
Oh my God, Kim, that's hilarious.
Well, it's so dark, I know. Hearing
about the recession. I'll be texting you like, Kim, what is happening? What do I do?
I know. And it's so crazy because the weird thing about what the signs that we're seeing right now is that the fundamentals of the economy are actually pretty strong. It's the politics that's going on. The people that are making the decisions, as we know, are a little... Right. So it's causing like this manufactured hysteria because the fundamentals of the economy are actually pretty strong.
Wow, that's so wild. It'll
be very interesting to see exactly what happens this time because there's nothing in the economy that has like a huge bubble that's waiting to be burst. It's like men. It's like the people that are making the decisions have these huge egos and they're making the wrong policy decisions.
So would you say then that the 2020 election is huge because it's going to impact us like going forward with the recession and how the economy goes?
It's beyond huge.
Yeah, I mean, every election is huge. Yeah. But
I mean, for more reasons than one.
Right.
It's beyond huge. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I learned so much, Kim. This I always talk to you, and I always think like, damn, I gotta save more. Even though I'm saving, I gotta save more.
We all do. I do too. Listen, life happens. I have, you know, fallen off the wagon many of times, and I'm trying to scrape up all my pennies as well. So I gotta walk it like I talk it.
Right, exactly. Well, I look forward to hearing more about, you know, to see what the Bronx Budget Girl is going to inform us as we get into the season of spending money because of the holidays. And
right.
I know there's certain seasons, too, that we just...
You just spend more. You spend more in the summer. You spend more during the holidays. Tell people, like, just do a Kris Kringle, like, group gifts. Or just flat out tell people, I ain't got it. Like, I know there's nothing wrong with telling people I don't have it.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And there's a whole bunch of other research that shows that saying no is just part of your mental health. So
right.
Well, thank you so much, Kim, again for being on the podcast. I always appreciate you.
Welcome. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, no, this is great. We have another catch-up session we need to do privately, but
yes.
Guys, remember to follow Kim. Do not judge her because she hasn't posted since August. She's very busy, but her information is really helpful. It's at the Bronx Budget Girl on Instagram. Thank you guys again for tuning in. If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. I'm on all podcast platforms. If you want to reach me, the best way is via email, basiclatinapodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you guys again so much. Talk to you soon. Stay well and take care.